Chapter 1. The Message to the Bishops of Spain, the True Reform that Heaven Requests. We have already described how in Spain, between 1931 and 1939, the terrible prophecies of the Great Secret about Bolshevik Russia's role as the scourge of God and rod of the divine wrath in our 20th century began to be fulfilled. But the very close relationship between Fatima and Spain was not limited to this terrible prophecy. In 1941, Heaven intervened once more to deliver the Fatima seer a message directly concerning the Church of Spain, the evils it suffered from and the means to be employed to remedy them. Thanks to the decisive work Fatima, España, Rusia, published by Father Alonso in 1976 as a summary of his great critical study, today we can give a full description of this almost unknown chapter in the history of Fatima. The author, who does not hide his most ardent love for Catholic Spain, his dear homeland, was able to show with great skill the importance of Heaven's messages concerning Spain. We shall also show how beyond its immediate application, the wider significance of this grave warning addressed to the pastors of the Church can be easily perceived. 1. The Revelation of June 12, 1941. Once again this divine communication took place on a Thursday evening, during the holy hour which Lucy made faithfully each week in conformity with the Sacred Heart's requests at Paria Limonial. But this was no ordinary Thursday, it was Corpus Christi, and in addition, that evening Sister Lucy was undoubtedly united in spirit with the pilgrims at the Cova de Iria who were going to spend the night in prayer to begin the ceremonies of June 13. Here is the most complete account of this divine communication, addressed by the seer to Archbishop Garcia y Garcia of Valladolid. He was the former Bishop of Tuy, who for this reason had become one of her spiritual advisors. To satisfy the desires of our good Lord and your Excellency, with the greatest clarity possible for me I explain what the good Lord deigned to communicate to me so that I could pass it on to you. The Holy Hours of Adoration and Reparation. With the permission of my superiors, I have the custom of remaining in prayer in the chapel until midnight from Thursday to Friday. In these hours of very great recollection, the good Lord has the habit of communicating himself so intensely to my poor soul that I do not doubt his presence in any way. Ordinarily, after having confounded me in my own nothingness and my own misery by making me feel what there is in me that displeases him, he continues by lamenting other things which, in the poor world, cause him such pain. The evils of the Church in Spain. On June 12, 1941, he complained especially about the coldness and laxity of the clergy of Spain both secular and regular, and the indifference of the sinful life of the Christian people. The remedy proposed. And he continued thus, if the bishops of Spain gathered each year in a house specially chosen to make their retreat, and if, with a common accord, they decided on the course to follow in leading the souls confided to them, they would receive enlightenment and special graces from the Divine Spirit. Make it known to the Archbishop of Valladolid, that I ardently desire the bishops to meet in a retreat to arrange among themselves and determine with a common accord the means to be employed for the reform of the Christian people and to remedy the laxity of the clergy and a great part of the religious. The number of those who serve me in the practice of sacrifice is very limited. I have need of souls and of priests who serve me by sacrificing themselves for me and for souls. The good Lord will make known to your Excellency the reality of his desires and he promises to bless the efforts you will deign to make to satisfy them. A message for the Church. This divine communication certainly marks an important date in the gradual revelation of the message of Fatima. It is not absolutely new because already, a few months earlier, Sister Lucy had reported similar complaints of our Lord concerning the world and sometimes Portugal as well. Still, this message which directly concerns the internal life of the Church and the evils it suffers from, is expressed here for the first time with clarity and insistence. Also for the first time, Heaven proposes a precise remedy for the evil denounced. The evils of the Church in Spain. What are the evils of which our Lord bitterly complains to his confidant? They are the coldness and sinful life of the Christian people. They are the very limited number of souls in the state of grace, disposed to give up whatever is demanded of them by the observance of his law. but the indifference of the people is undoubtedly only the effect of the laxity of consecrated souls. For our Lord also complains above all, to repeat Sister Lucy's most vigorous expressions, of the sinful, lax, and listless life of a great number of priests and religious souls from which he expects reparation and which move him, on the contrary, to indignation and chastisement. There are few souls who fully correspond to his designs of mercy. The number of those who serve me, he is speaking here about consecrated souls, in the practice of sacrifice is very limited. I need souls and priests who serve me by sacrificing themselves for me and for souls. Once again, we are very much in line here with the message of the Sacred Heart at Paray-le-Monial. In his great revelation of June 16, 1675, our Lord already complained about the infidelity of consecrated souls. Here we must recall this divine oracle, the last phrases of which are very often omitted or toned down. Behold this heart which has so loved men that it has spared nothing, exhausting itself and consuming itself to give them evidence of its love, and in return I receive for the most part only ingratitude by their irreverences and their sacrileges, and by the coldness and scorn they have for me in this sacrament of love. But what pains me most is that it is hearts consecrated to me who treat me thus. This is why I ask you. The Sacred Heart goes on to ask for reparation for all these offenses. The same complaints and the same requests which the Sacred Heart once addressed to Saint Margaret Mary, it now addresses to his messenger from Fatima. Faced with the unchanged deigning of the forces of evil and the deluge of sin in a world which is more and more involved in a satanic revolt against him, God needs more than ever faithful souls, generous and fervent souls entirely consecrated to him, who console his outraged heart, and through a life full of duty and sacrifice make reparation for the crimes of apostate humanity. The bishop's duty, reform in head and members. There is another element in this message of June 12, 1941. Our Lord indicates to the seer the remedy which must be applied to this evil. This true reform of the people and the clergy is to be promoted by the bishops. Let them remember that they have charge of souls. Whether the faithful and consecrated souls themselves are more or less fervent, more or less holy, it belongs to the zeal of the bishops to make the necessary decisions. On them and on them alone it is incumbent to lay down the disciplinary decrees or courageous measures which will re-establish the good spirit and fervour in the clergy and religious orders, and good Christian morals among the faithful. The maxim dear to Saint Pius X, do your duty and everything will go well, summarizes the spirit of this request of our Lord perfectly. Notice here that the revelation is not a substitute for the ordinary exercise of the episcopal ministry. Heaven simply and urgently requests the pastors of the flock to fulfill the conditions necessary to receive the graces of light and strength which will make them take together the measures adequate for the true reform requested. Each year let them meet in a retreat to determine by a common accord the road to follow in leading the souls entrusted to them. In effect, it is certain that in a church where true Catholic doctrine and the great traditional discipline impose themselves on everybody without being disputed by anyone, bishops' meetings have always been the most effective means of remedying abuses, and encouraging and supporting all holy enterprises in the service of God. Let us retain but one example, which is closely related to the history of Fatima since it concerns the rebirth of the Church in Portugal. The latter had fallen very low at the beginning of this century, victim of a concordat arrangement under a corrupt, liberal, and Masonic monarchy. An enlightening precedent, the directives of Saint Pius X, 1905. Lamentable scandals had taken place at the major seminary of Lisbon. Without any delay, Saint Pius X reacted vigorously. On May 5, 1905, he addressed the letter Solicito Vehementi Animo to the Patriarch, Cardinal Nito. It is a brief document but rich in doctrine, and its conclusion particularly interests us here. Having examined the unbelievable sorrow which the recent grave disorders had caused him, the Holy Pope took advantage of the occasion to address a vigorous exhortation to the Portuguese bishops to watch over the good order in their seminaries with greater care. We beg you, do not let your zeal as pastors of souls fail in any way on this point. If these establishments faithfully preserve their character and their reason for existence, very great things can be expected of them, On the contrary, if they depart little by little from this purpose, the greatest evils are to be feared. This has just been confirmed by sad experience. Therefore, if you have at heart, and it is a grave duty for you, the vigilance to admit into your clergy priests who will in no way disannoy the holy ministry by their ignorance, their laziness, or bad morals, but on the contrary demonstrate their worthiness by their knowledge, their zeal, their integrity of life, it is obvious that each of you is bound to ensure good order in your seminary. The significant part is that, after reminding the bishops of the duties incumbent upon them and the necessity that they not do anything contrary to their conscience as bishops, Saint Pius X concluded with a formal order corresponding precisely to the request which our Lord addressed to the bishops of Spain in 1941 through Sister Lucy. In this whole affair, i.e. the dignity and holiness of clerical life, which touches each of you in particular as well as all of you in general, since the salvation of the Church in Portugal depends on it, let it not suffice for you to exercise your zeal in isolated efforts, rather we desire that you combine your enlightenment and deliberate together to study the best way of attaining the goal pursued by all. For this reason, since we have learned that the custom of having solemn bishops' meetings has been interrupted in your country, you will see that it returns in force as early as possible, and especially in view of the question of which we are speaking. When our Lord urgently requests the bishops of Spain to meet to determine together the proper means of effecting the necessary reform of the Christian people, the clergy and religious orders, clearly it is not a case of substituting a collective authority for the inalienable authority of each pastor at the head of his flock. In the case of the bishops, it is a way of mutually enlightening each other and assisting each other to make salutary decisions, however painful and sad they might be. These requests from heaven refer to the great age-old tradition of the Church, the tradition of the Council of Trent, the tradition of Saint Pius X. 2. The passing on of the message. A long silence. Curiously, the letter we have quoted, where Sister Lucy explains in detail the divine communication received on June 12, 1941, was not written until a year and a half after the event. Later on, the seer avowed that she had hesitated a very long time before making known this warning from heaven to her directors. The fact must be stressed, she experienced an extreme reluctance at revealing this kind of message concerning the disorders of the Church. If there was any need, this reserve, this almost insurmountable difficulty in passing on revelations which are accusatory of the clergy and hierarchy of the Church, testifies in her favor. But perhaps there is something more. Perhaps another motive might have been at work, encouraging our seer to maintain silence. If this message to Spain has some relation with the themes of the third secret, which Our Lady had not yet permitted her to reveal, we can easily understand her procrastination and her long delay before she dared to reveal it. Later on, she was to accuse herself of cowardice, where perhaps she had been paralyzed by doubts and uncertainty on what she could say and what she had to keep silent on. The hypothesis is very possible. In any case, months passed and Sister Lucy continued to keep secret this complaint of our Lord regarding the Spanish Church. Fortunately, she was finally led to speak by providential circumstances and a formal order of her spiritual director. A providential visit by the Bishop of Tuy, at the end of November 1942. Monsignor Garcia y Garcia, who had been bishop of the little city of Galicia since 1935, had great esteem for the Fatima seer. He considered her one of the sheep of his flock, and although he himself visited her frequently, he had charged his vicar general, Don Angel Varela, with being her ordinary spiritual director. After the death of Maria Rosa, Lucy's mother, on July 16, 1942, he showed how great was his paternal affection for our little seer. In his diocesan bulletin he published a concession of indulgences in favor of those who would pray for the repose of her mother's soul. Don Antonio Garcia had his doctorate in theology, philosophy, and canon law from the Gregorian University of Rome, and was well known in Spain for his numerous writings. At that period, he enjoyed great authority within the Spanish episcopate. Appointed recently to the See of Valladolid, the new archbishop remained at the same time apostolic administrator of Tuy while he waited for a successor to be appointed. At the end of November, 1942, during a visit to the Dorotheen convent, he had a long conversation with Sister Lucy. Shortly afterwards, Sister Lucy received a written account of this conversation, no doubt from the Bishop of Guerza, Don Manuel Ferreira, who at the time was her principal spiritual director. Lucy recalls, "The Archbishop of Valladolid spoke to me with great interest about devotion to the Immaculate Heart of Mary. He told me that he had always been persuaded that the reign of the Heart of Jesus would not come without being preceded by that of the Immaculate Heart of Mary, since it is through her that everything comes to us. A wonderful intervention of heaven. He told me how before making the blueprint for the construction of a church in honor of the Sacred Heart at Valladolid, in the very place where this Divine Heart had told Father Hoyos that he would reign in Spain, the architect, confused, presented him the blueprint with a spectacular tower dedicated to the Immaculate Heart of Mary, telling him, 'I don't know how this happened, most excellent Lord, it seemed that an invisible being guided my hand, and without knowing how, without having thought of it, I found that I had this tower dedicated to the Immaculate Heart of Mary.' 'Very well,' His Excellency answered, 'the tower of the Immaculate Heart of Mary will reign in the temple of the Heart of Jesus. These two hearts are inseparable. It is now over a year ago that our Lord insisted. It was a consolation to see how the good Lord moved hearts, to lead them, to the fulfillment of his designs, but as always it is I who do the least in this respect. It is now over a year ago, the first divine communication took place on June 12, 1941, that our Lord insisted that I manifest his desires to His Grace the Bishop of Valladolid. He wants the bishops of Spain to meet in a retreat and discuss together the means they must employ to remedy the laxity of the clergy and Christian people. In spite of the great opportuneness of this occasion to explain it to him, timidity closed my mouth, although His Excellency had asked me three times if I had anything to explain to him or ask him, or if I desired something of him, etc., etc. His Excellency is a saint, but it is I who am incapable of anything. Until the present I have not spoken of this desire of our Lord out of fear that someone order me to reveal it. In effect that is what happened. The Bishop of Guerza answered her immediately, assuring her that this communication certainly came from God and that it must be passed on without delay to its intended recipient, the Archbishop of Valladolid. So on January 17, 1943, Sister Lucy took up her pen to write to Bishop Garcia y Garcia. But this first letter, which Father Alonso quotes from, was very brief, and the Archbishop asked her for more ample information. In response to this request, she immediately wrote the more complete account we have quoted at the beginning of this chapter. 3. The true penance heaven requires. Some new divine communications, the letter of February 28, 1943. Still encouraged by the Bishop of Guerza, and perhaps also to answer some of his questions, Sister Lucy wrote a long letter on February 28, 1943. In his last work, Father A. M. Martins gives the integral text. In this letter, she expresses with precision the various divine communications she had already received months before. But she also alludes to new divine locutions heard during a holy hour between Thursday evening and Friday, for which she does not give the exact date. Because of the importance of the themes it takes up, this text constitutes one of the major documents of the history of Fatima. The consecration to the Immaculate Heart. The good Lord has already shown me his contentment with the act, although incomplete according to his desire, performed by the Holy Father and several bishops. He promises in return to end the war soon. The conversion of Russia is not for now. The message for the bishops of Spain. If the bishops of Spain take into account our Lord's desires and undertake a true reform among the people and clergy, good. If not, Russia will again be the enemy through which God will chastise them once more. The true penance. The good Lord will allow himself to be appeased, but he complains bitterly and sadly about the very limited number of souls in the state of grace, disposed to deny themselves according to what the observance of his law requires of them. Here is the true penance which the good Lord requests today, the sacrifice which everybody must impose on himself to lead a life of justice in the observance of his law. And he desires that this way be clearly made known to souls, for many give to the word penance the sense of great austerities, and as they feel neither the strength nor the generosity for that, they get discouraged and let themselves go into a life of lukewarmness and sin. From Thursday to Friday, being in the chapel with my superior's permission, at midnight, our Lord told me, "The penance that I request and require now is the sacrifice demanded of everybody by the accomplishment of his own duty and the observance of my law. And, Your Excellency, I have to be the first to submit in all things to the orders and desires of the good Lord. And for that purpose, to obey what you told me in your last letter, I send you this declaration. The good Lord does not manifest this to me by means of apparitions, it is by means of an intimate and intense feeling of his presence in my soul." Thanks to the Bishop of Gurza to whom this letter was addressed, this message rapidly came to have great repercussions in Portugal, and before long in Spain as well. It was read publicly on two occasions very favorable to its publication. The first occasion was on April 20, 1943 at Fatima, during a retreat according to the spiritual exercises of Saint Ignatius preached to a group of doctors, jurists, engineers, and other members of the Portuguese elite. During the month of May it was also read to the Portuguese bishops, who were meeting at the Cova da Iria for their annual retreat. A copy of the letter, intended for Spain, had been sent to the Archbishop of Valladolid. A letter to Father Goncalves, May 4, 1943. Before commenting on this document of capital importance, we must still quote a letter of Sister Lucy to her old confessor, who had just left the mother country to return to his mission in Zambia. While developing the same themes, Sister Lucy provides us with some supplementary information. "Thank goodness, I finally received a letter from you. My God, it took so long. I can't even think that you are so far away, but I think about it a lot so that my sacrifice may be more complete for the conversion of those souls. May the good Lord accept it. As for me, I am doing well. The Bishop of Gurza tries to help me, and I always thank him for his good counsel and prayers. He also shows me what I must make known, and that is as always the most difficult thing for me to do, but obedience gives me strength and I keep going. I had to make known to the Archbishop of Valladolid, by order of His Excellency, a little request of our Lord to the bishops of Spain and another to the bishops of Portugal. May God grant that all of them hear His voice. He wishes that the bishops of Spain gather together in a retreat and determine a reform in the people, clergy and religious orders, for some convents. And many members of others. Do you understand? He wishes that it be made clear to souls that the true penance he now wants and requires consists first of all in the sacrifice that each one must make to fulfill his own religious and temporal duties. He promises the end of the war shortly in answer to the act of consecration made by His Holiness. But since it was incomplete, the conversion of Russia will take place later. If the bishops of Spain do not attend to his wishes, it, Russia, will be once more the scourge with which God punishes them." Throughout her life Sister Lucy has never stopped receiving new revelations and divine communications. However, one fact is worth noting, these revelations are always closely related to the message received in 1916-1917. This is the reason for the perfect coherence of all her writings, in spite of the great diversity of the themes discussed and the great lapses in time in their date of composition. They always refer to some phrase in the initial message. The same is true for this revelation, which our seer returns to with insistence. It concerns the true penance our Lord wants and now demands. The true penance and the true reform that heaven demands. We are now at the very heart of the public message of 1917. From month to month, Our Lady had announced, "In October, I will tell you who I am and what I want." During her final apparition she had solemnly declared to the children, "People must no longer offend the Lord our God, for He is already too much offended." This is the primordial request. Indeed, When the Blessed Virgin requests prayers and sacrifices at other times, Sister Lucy insists on making it clear, especially those which it is necessary to make so as to avoid sin. Is not this solemn warning on the true penance more relevant than ever? Heaven does not make pathetic appeals for the faithful to commit themselves to take part in the apostolate. Nor does it require great austerities. Far from asking us to pray at least 3 hours a day and fast twice a week, Sister Lucy warns against such requirements being laid upon everyone. These are excellent ways of immensely nourishing self-love, and before long they leave souls discouraged and desperate, and ready to relapse into a life of indifference and sin. No, the way proposed to us at Fatima is much more humble, more solid. We are not capable of the extraordinary mortifications our fathers imposed on themselves. But with all our hearts let us at least apply ourselves to pleasing God by giving up sin and fulfilling the duties of our state as best we can. This demands great sacrifices, great acts of self-denial, precisely the ones that God expects of us before anything else. Once more it is the golden rule of Saint Pius X, do your duty and everything will go well. Finally, the context of the letter of February 28, 1943 underlines the universality of the maxim. It concerns the simple faithful, but also priests and religious, the bishops of Spain and the Pope himself. Let everyone accomplish his whole duty, following the demands of his state in life, and everything will go well, everything will be so much better in the Church. This is the true penance which will infallibly bring about the true reform of the people, the clergy and religious orders, urgently requested by heaven. The future of Spain in 1941 and more generally the future of the world will depend on it. For a reprimand full of love. A severe warning. This is the great teaching of Our Lady of Fatima, as well as the teaching of the Gospel and the Prophets. Our history is a sacred history which God sovereignly directs as a most kind and merciful Father. Precisely because of this jealous love and this infinite mercy, he also acts with justice and rigor. Whether the world has peace or war, whether our nations and the world have a happy destiny or an unhappy one, depends in the end on the zeal of Christians and first of all their leaders, the Pope, the cardinals, their bishops, their priests, and consecrated souls. It depends on whether they correspond with faith and docility to God's holy will and the great designs of his heart. This is why the message to the Church in Spain is accompanied by a terrible threat. As we have seen, if the bishops pay attention to our Lord's desires and undertake a true reform, it will be well. If not, Russia will still be the enemy by which God will chastise them once more. It could not have been said more clearly. The terrible civil war had been the great chastisement of the Church in Spain, gravely unfaithful to its age-old tradition of integral, conquering faith. Already for several generations it had grown indifferent and dangerously compromised with the liberal, Masonic and Antichrist current raging over Europe. Let the Spanish people at least realize the lesson to be learned from this terrible trial of purification. Such is the meaning of the message of June 12, 1941. An unquestionable religious renaissance. However, such a severe warning addressed to Spain 4 years after the heroic crusade, in the course of which 13 bishops and over 7,000 priests, brothers, and nuns followed by several hundred thousand of the faithful had shed their blood for the Catholic faith, might be surprising because of its abrupt nature. Immediately after the victory of April 1939, had there not been a wonderful effort of Catholic restoration? This fact is incontestable. To demonstrate this we can hardly do better than quote here the enthusiastic words of Pope Pius XII to the new ambassador of Spain. The Pope spoke on December 17, 1942, at the very moment Sister Lucy decided to inform the Archbishop of Valladolid of heaven's severe warnings. Spain is Catholic, and this tree has so profoundly taken root in its soil, as well as in the courageous hearts of its children, that the formidable torment itself, whose consequences we still deplore, was not capable of uprooting it. And even more, just as the field grows greener after the storm, so we see, Spain, springing up once more in spite of an era so unfavorable for recuperation, and recovering, powerful and conscious of its past, full of its own proper spirit and confidence in the future. As for ourselves, with a fatherly regard we help it by our prayers, and at the opportune moment by our words and encouragement as well. Day by day we have followed this beautiful recovery which gives us such great hope for the good of Spain. We have admired its continual manifestations of piety and faith in public or in private. We have heard you say that your way of life would not be perfect if it was not profoundly Catholic, that you affirm the most absolute orthodoxy 100 times. For the great consolation of our soul we have been informed of the progress of Catholic action, of the abundance of good and solid priestly vocations, we have seen Christ triumph in the schools, we have seen churches rise from their smoldering ruins and the Christian spirit permeate laws, institutions, and all manifestations of official life. Finally, we have contemplated God present once more in your history. Alluding to the immense cross 165 yards high crowning the memorial basilica of the Valley of Los Caídos, where construction was beginning, the Pope continued. We have only one desire to express concerning Spain, to see her united and glorious, lifting up a cross in her powerful hands, surrounded by an entire world which, thanks largely to her, thinks and prays in Spanish, and also to propose her as the example of a restoring power bringing life and education, and the example of a faith in which, after all, we will always find the solution of all problems. Then, before making his blessing descend upon the beloved Spain of saints and heroes, the Holy Father mentioned the most noble head of the Spanish state, who was so worthily placed at the head of his dear country. In other words, thanks to the harmonious cooperation of the two powers, much good was already being accomplished in Spain, just as in Portugal, concerning which, as we remember, our Lord had addressed them in these terms in a letter to Cardinal Sergira from Sister Lucy. Writing on December 19, 1940, she said, "Our Lord is dissatisfied and grieved with the sins of the world and of Portugal. He complains about the lack of correspondence, the sinful life of the people, and especially about the lukewarmness, indifference, and extremely comfortable life of the majority of the priests and members of religious orders. The number of souls he meets through prayer and sacrifice is extremely limited. The mark of a real predilection." Harsh words indeed. However, let us be so bold as to say, the culpable life of the people and the laxity of the clergy and consecrated souls were surely no graver in these two countries, where an unquestionable religious renaissance was in progress, than in other nations. Quite the contrary. But our Lord, who had preserved them as if by a miracle from the terrible chastisement of the war which was then ravaging the world, had greater designs of mercy upon them. These two nations had been chosen by the Queen of Heaven to manifest her in our century. Without any doubt they were called to be the first to implement Our Lady's requests. Thus they were destined to become for other people the striking showcase of the incomparable benefits granted by the mediation of the Immaculate Heart of Mary. Therefore these divine reprimands and even threats, far from being the sign of some kind of reprobation, were actually the mark of a real predilection. They remind us of a passage from the Epistle to the Hebrews. "And you have forgotten the exhortation that is addressed to you as sons, saying, My son, neglect not the discipline of the Lord, neither be thou weary when thou art rebuked by him. For whom the Lord loves, he chastises, and he scourges every son whom he receives." Prov 3:11, continue under discipline. God deals with you as sons, for what son is there whom his father does not correct? But if you are without discipline in which all have had a share, then you are illegitimate children and not sons. Hebrews 12:5-8. It reminds us also of the reproaches which Our Lady, in her first apparition to Catherine Labour on July 18, 1830, asked Catherine to pass on to her superiors. As at Thy, heaven complains of the great laxity of certain religious souls. Seated in the armchair of the director while Catherine knelt next to her, Our Lady said, "My child, I love to pour out my graces upon the community especially. I love it a great deal. However, I am sad. There are great abuses. The rule is not observed. Regularity leaves something to be desired. there is a great laxity among the two communities. Tell this to the person entrusted with you, although he is not superior. He will be entrusted with the community in a special way. He must do everything possible to see that the rule returns in vigor. Tell him on my behalf not to read bad books or lose time visiting. When the rule is returned to force, a great community will come to be joined to your own. God will bless them and they will enjoy great peace. Finally, let us recall our Lord's warning to the Church of Laodicea, which was so vehement. I know thy works, that thou art neither cold nor hot. I would thou wert cold or hot. But because thou art lukewarm, and neither cold nor hot, I will begin to vomit thee out of my mouth. Those whom I love, I rebuke and chastise. Be zealous, therefore, and do penance. Behold, I stand at the gate, and knock. If any man shall hear my voice, and open to me the door, I will come in to him, and will sup with him, and he with me. APOC 3:15-20. As we have said, the Portuguese bishops took heaven's warning, which was passed on to them by the Fatima seer, very seriously. On February 2, 1941, they published a collective pastoral letter on the anguish of the war and the need for expiation, which was clearly inspired by the message passed on by Sister Lucy. Father Alonso adds that at this period, Sister Lucy was behind many initiatives of the Portuguese bishops which obtained the most excellent and salutary results for the Christian people. Before long, the Spanish bishops were to follow this example. As we will see, their country was saved as if by a miracle from the terrible Bolshevik menace of the years 1945 to 1946. But first their response was awaited. The future of Spain, Sister Lucy's disquiet. Don Garcia easily guessed that there would be an indignant reaction from some of his colleagues, the bishops and archbishops. He could not bring himself to immediately pass on the message he had received. Meanwhile, he interrupted Lucy again, could it not have been the result of some illusion, he asked her. With her customary humility, the seer responded that she herself had had some fears, but that her spiritual director had assured her that this came from God. The Archbishop of Valladolid was convinced. He wrote to Lucy. Very well, my daughter. For your peace of mind I can tell you this, here in Spain there is a soul to whom our Lord also communicates himself, and he revealed exactly the same thing to her. Now we must pray a great deal to our Lord to help me overcome the difficulties which are numerous, especially on the part of the government. Time passed, and Sister Lucy was afraid that heaven's requests might go unheeded. She complained to Don Antonio. I ask the Immaculate Heart of Mary to help your Excellency fulfill the designs of our good Lord. May the good Lord not say, as he did concerning the Holy Father, he will do it, but it will be late. The Archbishop of Valladolid was intrigued by this last phrase which he did not understand. Lucy explained it to him in the following letter. As far as what I say about the Holy Father is concerned, I only repeat the words of our Lord. These words were spoken to me in reply to an urgent supplication which I made for His Holiness. No doubt the seer was referring to a divine communication received in May 1936, where our Lord tells her, on the subject of the consecration of Russia, the Holy Father. Pray a great deal for the Holy Father. He will do it, but it will be late. This was already the content of the terrible revelation of Rionjo during the summer of 1931, after Pope Pius XI had refused to pay attention to the request made of him in the name of Our Lady of Fatima. Sister Lucy wrote to Archbishop Garcia y Garcia. I don't know why, I am afraid of hearing the same words concerning Spain. For some time I have been asking that the moment be hastened when God's designs shall be fulfilled in this nation. And the fear of hearing the same response comes back to me, they will do it, but it will be late. In this same year, 1943, at the moment when Sister Lucy, who was ill, informed the Archbishop of Valladolid of her grave anxiety over Spain, a prophetic anxiety which the future was to fully justify, she also spoke with him about an even greater concern. She was preoccupied by an urgent task that frightened her. Bishop da Silva had asked her to write down the text of the third secret.